We'll talk about me.
Maybe I'll talk about me.
Hello and welcome once again for the 149th time to Woo-hoo. Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. And at the other end of the series of tubes and wires we call the internets, Joe Crazy Writer. How you doing today, Joe?
I'm doing okay.
Even though we're in the grip of the polar vortex.
I need help.
Well, I've known that. How long have I known you now?
I'm trapped in a house with three teenagers. I gotta get out. This polar vortex is keeping me in. It's only 60 degrees outside, folks.
On July 14th.
Which for Minnesotans, we're not really complaining about it.
I'm happy.
I'm joyful. So together,
I have
happy,
to go
happy,
to work wearing
joy,
a vest and a tie.
Which is good for you, because, you know, being the best dressed man in comics, you do have to do it.
Yes.
And, of course,
the law.
I'm thinking it's just tacky. Not because it is tacky, but because tomorrow will be a weird day. And the Weird Al Yankovic has released his first video for the new album coming out tomorrow. And, of course, it's called Tacky, which is interesting because it's parodies Pharrell's Happy, which is a song I have never heard. So one of these days, I'm going to be listening to it and go, oh, look at that. Somebody copied Weird Al Yankovic.
Now, I know the song. Do you want to know how I know the song, Joe?
Well, considering I have three teenagers and they don't know the song, tell me how you know the song.
You know, I work at the group home.
Yes.
And on Sundays, I have to take the residents to their church.
Mm-hmm.
And the one church I go to, the hippie church, which has the band with the guitarist and two drummers, and yeah, and they always put new lyrics to Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, which makes me grind my teeth out of anger. They did a version of Happy. So they've changed lyrics and, you know, made it all about the Jesus. And I'm listening going, this is a really catchy song. I know they didn't come up with it.
It is.
And as we're driving back, one of the staff says, oh, I really like their Jesus version of Happy. What's Happy? And they looked at me as if I would have said, what's oxygen?
Yeah.
I guess it was the number one song forever and ever, and they play it in commercials that I don't watch and on radio stations I don't listen to and on headphones that I wouldn't allow near my face. But Weird Al's song's kind of funny. Makes fun of Crocs.
It is funny. And the video is hilarious. I mean, anytime you put Jet Black in a video, you know it's good.
And Aisha Tyler's in it. Yeah. Margaret Cho's in it.
Yeah, I recognized her.
And they're dressed
like some of the people who about three times.
Would come in the shop.
I may end up watching it a fourth time while we're podcasting just because, you know, I'm sure you'll go off into something that I just won't really pay attention to.
Yeah, thanks.
I got to admit, though, the day didn't start out, you know, with me being trapped in a house with three teens.
How did your day start, Joe?
It actually started out good. I actually had some eBay sales. So I got them all together. And, also,
were you happy?
For the people who did send in their address, I did send a few things, in my, you know, vast accumulation of crap. So hopefully they'll get some stuff in the mail and be pleasantly bemused, annoyed, or otherwise. Well, let's just say if we lose one of our three listeners, I'll know my job is done. I can lose the other two, then this here podcast pretty much done. So anyways,
well,
I got all that.
I'll just continue doing my solo podcast.
I got all this stuff mailed, and I went downtown, and I rode our brand new Green Line, which is a light rail that goes from downtown St. Paul to downtown Minneapolis. And I went to go have lunch with Monsieur Gruba. And, of course, when I was there, I wanted to pick up the long-lost Mike Grell Hulk number one Wizard World cover. He's been holding on to me all these years. So I was able to pick that up. And then on the way back, we actually ran into a subscriber from Hot Comics whom I have not seen in at least 10 or if not more years.
Sweet Christmas.
I know. It was kind of fun. I mean, his name was Larry. He was a big, big time collector of statues. And,
I think I remember him.
Oh yeah. Yeah. He was a great guy. Last we heard.
The guy who, would have to kind of put them on layaway.
No. Larry, he picked up his statues. He opened them in the shop, checked them out, made sure.
Oh, okay.
And he took them home.
Somebody else I'm thinking of.
Last we heard, he was going through some nasty personal stuff, and he told us that he lost half of his statues. Damn divorce. And I'm sure the wife, the ex, just took them because she wanted.
Good.
Yeah, not that she wanted them, but he had a new wife with them. I introduced to her. I shook her hand in sympathy, and he said he's doing really well. So we talked to Pat, Larry and I for a couple minutes, and he was just downtown because we got this year All-Star game going on. So there's a bunch of people in for Twins Fest, and I guess it's like an All-Star Fest where Wizard World was. Now they filled it with baseball stuff, and you can go meet past All-Stars and play games. Tonight is a home run rally. So, news is people tripping over each other to have some fun. So, and then I took the light rail back. Unbeknownst to me, my daughter was on the light rail at the same time going the opposite direction. Otherwise, I might have stopped and had gelato with her. So not all in all a bad day. But when I got back, originally, Holly, she's off school. So we decided, my wife decided that I should do something with her. Other than go to a comic book store, heretic. And,
why would you want to do something other than go to a comic book store? What is she, crazy?
I don't know. I mean, Holly's happy with it. I'm happy with it. Other than the, inevitable, $50 worth of stuff we buy. So we were like, okay, well, let's, initially she was going to come with me and we were going to, go up the Fauché Tower. At one time was the largest skyscraper west of Chicago before you had to go all the way to California to get one bigger. Now it's just a dwarf among giants, but they have an observation and a museum on the top, and we thought that would be fun. But then sometime between that plan and when I actually left, Holly decided she'd invite a friend over.
Uh-oh.
And so then one friend came, and they said they wanted to come along, and I was thinking, well, let's see. Downtown Minneapolis, Long Green Line. I said, Holly, if you want, we could just go do something afterwards. And here's what Dad's thinking. Dad's thinking, okay, they'll probably want to go to a mall, and be it the Mega Mall or the Maplewood Mall just north of us. Either way, they had a bookstore. So I figured they could go run around the mall. I will sit in the bookstore and just,
mope.
Well, read books, have gelato, whatever. On the way back, I get another text. Can I invite a third friend over? And I'm like, whatever. So by this time, the polar vortex is in full swing. The temperatures drop from where it's supposed to be 80 degrees to an alarming 60 degrees. And, a little bit of sun, a little bit of clouds, a little bit of rain, And as I come into the house, here are the girls sitting on the couch, eating Doritos, watching television, which in and of itself is not shocking. However, remember, we got rid of Dish, so I have maybe 5 channels. And they somehow are just randomly turned on the TV and are watching one of them and giggling. I retreated into my room and shut the door. I have not emerged. Well, I did emerge briefly. I do like to listen to NBC Nightly News because Brian Williams just sort of soothes me to sleep. And then I'll watch a rerun of Big Bang Theory. But I ran back into here just in time to start this here podcast. And I don't think I want to go out. Even though I do have really, really bad gas, I shocked Gruber because we had stopped at aforementioned bookstore downtown Minneapolis. And we're just looking at some of the different graphic novels. You know, he was talking, he likes to read Walking Dead in the hardcover forms they make. I like the, what do they call them? Compendiums, like 50
yes.
issues. And then I greased one out, not only shocking the worker who was one row over, but also pretty much fumigating the entire section of the store. So naturally, I just followed Pat, blaming him. But on the light rail, and when you're outside, nobody really cares. Matter of fact, if you do it on the light rail, people tend not to sit next to you, which is nice. I do like to use that same thing when I'm digging through quarter boxes at the various cons coming up, because that way, if you happen to be digging on something that I want to be looking at, it's a great way to get you away from where I am. And
are there any comic book conventions coming up?
Well, there's rumor that on Saturday, October 4th, 2014, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., the One Day Wonder, the 420 minutes of extreme comic book action, will be at the Minnesota State Fairgrounds in the Education Building. Celebrating 26 years of comic book action, the MNCBA are proud to present FallCon Comic Book Party. And if that doesn't get you going, if that doesn't get you pounding the egg salad so you can ward off those potential people sneaking through your back issues, they're mine. They're mine, I tell you. At least I get a chance to look through them. You can go to www.midwestcomicbook.com and see if Nick has posted anything. I don't think he has, because him, an incredible box truck full of goodies and about 8 employees of the source all heading down to the San Diego Comic-Con. And they may be on their way now. I'm not sure.
You know who else is on a trip?
Who?
These guys, our sponsors.
Crazy Comics and Stories is brought to you by DreamHost.com. DreamHost.com is the best, bar none, web host in the whole known universe. And you can save $20 on your first year of web hosting. Just use the code CRAZY, K-R-A-Y-Z, and you get $20 off your first year of hosting. Graze.com is healthy snacks delivered right to your door. And if you use the code CORY, S3R5P, that's C-O-R-Y, S3R5P, you get your first and fifth box free. Go to graze.com to find out more. If you want to contact us at Crazy Comics and Stories, you can. You can either go to our Facebook fan page at Crazy Comics and Stuff. You can email us at corey.strode@gmail.com, or you can call us at 952-856-0519. When you do that, we will read or play your comment on the air. If you want to advertise on Crazy Comics and Stories, you can. Just go ahead and email me at corey.strode@gmail.com, subject advertising. Thanks.
Hi, everybody. This is Brian Christman.
Shane Kelly.
Adam Murdo.
Matt.
Chris Eberle.
Peter Rios.
And we're from the Comic Geek Speak podcast.
On May 2nd of this year, our friend and fellow podcaster, Jamie D'Alessandro, lost his battle with cancer.
In honor of Jamie, we are participating in a 5K and 10K race to raise money for the Livestrong Foundation, which provides support for people with cancer.
We will be taking part in the Team Livestrong Challenge, Philly, on Sunday, August 17th in Blue Bell, Pennsylvania.
We are collectively running
and walking
under the team name of Jamie's Avengers.
If you'd like to join us in the event or make a donation to our team, go to livestrong.org and search for Jamie's Avengers.
Thank you all for your time and
Jamie's Avengers assemble!
Cool.
What a bunch of good eggs.
They are. Ooh. My wife told me I can't eat eggs anymore. Apparently, I chased her out of the room last night.
Yeah, I'm amazed she didn't chase you out of the room. Isn't that her bed?
Well, you know, the thing is that it's, I don't know what she's complaining about. All I smelt were roses.
Well, that kind of figures. Well,
Guns and Roses. Buns and Roses. Whoa, whoa, sweet gas of mine. Great, now we'll have Axl Rose swing us.
And you gas the crickets.
That's true. And I'm really gassing myself. And the sad thing is I started this here podcast. I don't have my friendly favorite beverage next to me. So as my mouth gets moister and moister, you'll start hearing Velcro. That's just me peeling my tongue off the roof of my mouth.
Well, that's good.
Up to so that, Corey, what have you been up to?
Well, work and work and work. And I was looking over sales figures, and I saw the huge sales figures for Amazing Spider-Man number one.
Oh, yeah?
About 500,000 copies.
Wow.
Which these days is amazing. But I was thinking back.
Uh-oh.
Hold on. Let me play the thinking back music.
Holly, hand me my thinking grenades.
Joe, in your mind, what was the first variant cover used for a first issue where the company actually went out of their way to make a variant cover?
I would say X-Force number one.
Nope, before that.
Well, that's the one that comes to mind.
Think back further.
Well, I mean, the first day of the shop, we had Death of Superman, and you could buy the bagged version, you could buy the newsstand version in case you didn't want to open the bagged version, and there was, of course, the rare platinum version, which was only given out to select retailers, of which I was not at the time.
Think back, Joe.
Are you talking pre-shop?
Yes, ooh. I'm talking pre-shop. I'm talking when you were just a fanboy, a weekend warrior, as it were.
That might be Legends of the Dark Knight.
That's right. Legends of the Dark Knight, number one.
Yeah, and it wasn't so much a variant. They just put different pieces of cardboard around the comic.
No, it wasn't even cardboard. It's just they put a second cover on it.
Ooh.
With four different colors.
And we jumped up and down on that like Oprah on a Baytam. I mean, we were all over that.
The thing that got me, because I was working comics retail at the time, DC, a couple weeks before it came out, said, look, we think you guys ordered too many of these. So we're going to help by doing this. And they explained that there would be an outer cover, that there would be four different colors, hoping that, you know, comic fans being completists.
And we were.
They would buy four of each copy. So basically DC was saying, look, we're doing this to help you because we think you were stupid for ordering a bunch of copies. Okay, they didn't say we think you're stupid, but they did say we think that the market will be oversaturated. And I was working at Schindler's, and I remember when that came out, they were right. People came up, one of each.
One of each. One of each.
And this was still back in the day when people would buy one to read and one to save. I don't know, Joe, if you remember that or not, but we had a lot of people who would buy two copies of X-Men, Spider-Man, Batman.
Oh, yeah, we had.
Not every book, but most, but a lot of books. And it'd be one to read and one to bag. And with that one, we even had people who bought eight copies. Four that they would bag, and four that they would use as reading copies. And they would ask, well, what's the difference between them? And I said, just the color. They didn't care. They wanted them. And that was the first variant cover I remember. And it was weird that it didn't really take off for a while. Because that was what? 89?
Mm-hmm.
And then the next year, Marvel knuckled under and gave Todd McFarlane his own book. And that was Spider-Man number one. And there were There was the newsstand cover.
Newsstand, black and white.
The direct cover.
Bagged.
The black and white unbagged, and the bagged.
And the platinum one, which, again, you had to be a retailer of esteem, of which, you know, I wasn't.
Well, you weren't even a retailer
nope.
then. So as a fan, now I worked in a shop, and for us it was more, okay, it's Spider-Man number one by Todd McFarlane. We're going to order a shit ton of these. And on a lot of them, it was a 50-50 cover split. But then you ordered so many and you got the special covers. And we tried to figure out, you know, what one would be. We knew the bag ones would be worth more. But we tried to figure out if the newsstand or the direct sales cover would be more. Now, as a fan, how did you look at the special covers of Legends, Dark Knight, and then Spider-Man?
Legends of the Dark Knight, I just remember buying one of each. I don't think at that time, you know, Pat and I would buy multiples. For a while, we'd buy things together, and then it just kind of, it became, you know, Pat would buy what he bought, I would buy what I bought. It was actually kind of an interesting way we ran the con. I mean, it was basically books we bought together would be an X book. Again, we're talking Weekend Warriors. There were a lot of conventions. Pat and I probably did at least one a month. Books we bought together would be an X. My books would be a J. His would be a P, obviously. Hence the name PNJ Comics. And what I found out is as time went on, if you sold a copy of X-Men 1, if it had a P on it, it was Pat's. If it had a J on it, it was ours. If it didn't have it on or if it had an X, then we knew it was both of ours. So, and at the end of the day, Pat would figure it out and, you know, we'd split our spoils accordingly. But what I discovered is that Pat spent a lot of time, not having a girlfriend or anything, buying more comics than I did. So it would be like, yeah, Pat had like all the hot comics you would possibly want. So if people were looking for Legends of the Dark Knight, purple cover, Pat had probably 20 of them, and he'd bring them out and be selling them. And so I'd basically be spending the whole weekend and not really doing much. I countered that by being kind of the filler guy. So I would like maybe take my run of Spectacular Spider-Man, of which nobody was looking for, bag and board them, maybe put a quarter above cover price and sell them. And that's how we ended up doing our sales. So Pat would always have the hot books. I would have all the rest of the books. So when Legends came out, I didn't really buy any of them. I think I bought one of each for myself. When Spider-Man came out, now Spider-Man had the advantage of being, we knew it was coming and we knew it was going to be hot, because by that time, his run on Amazing Spider-Man had gone through the stratosphere. People were spending lots of money picking up back issues. And I know at one time I was able to do it. And if anybody can invent Time Machine, go back and save a few copies of that Amazing Spider-Man 300, because that became hot as the first appearance of Venom, you know, beyond just being a key issue and being a McFarlane issue. So we knew it was coming, and I believe, what year did that come out?
1990. And I know Shinders, we went insane on it.
I think at that time, Pat and I were buying from Hot Comics. We were buying from Dan and Brian. So we were able to, we used previews and we ordered in advance. And I'm pretty sure of all the, you know, we probably went, hang on a second here. I am going to go to my favorite site, AtomicAvenue.com.
I thought it was some porn site.
Oh no, there's not just one I like. I mean, come on. I've got a life, you know. Let's see. And Spider-Man, here we go. Okay. We've got the green cover, which was the newsstand. I think on that one, we ran around and had to buy it off the newsstand. And then there is the second printing, which came out later, which is gold cover, gold ink on.
Gold!
Very valuable. oddly enough, some got that one has a price guide higher than the regular ones. So again, it's one of those where second printings, no one was buying it. Then there is the collector set green, which was the bagged newsstand green. And it had the newsstand version in it with, that's just, I guess that would be like the regular cover. And then there was the silver cover, and that came bagged. So right away you have bagged comics, unbagged comics. Then there is the direct market special edition second print. That differs from the one I talked about earlier. The other one has a UPC box on it. And that was the one that you had, if you were lucky enough, picked up at Barnes & Noble or Walden Books or whoever was carrying comics. The direct market special edition had the gold print, but it had Spider-Man's face on it. And then you had the platinum edition, which, of course, was a giveaway, usually one per shop. So of the ones you could order the green cover, newsstand, the bagged regular, the bagged silver, and then the regular silver. And then later, of course, the second print gold came out. So you had four different copies. I would venture to say if I ordered 10 copies, Groover must have ordered 50. And we would probably sit on them and then blow them out at the various shows that we did. And of course, now with the exception of the platinum and that goofy second print newsstand one, most of them are anywhere from a buck. I picked up a set in the quarter box at the last Spring Con just to read. So you're talking, we ordered lots of them and Lord knows how many Dan and Brian ordered when they went to that.
The next big one.
That would be, was that X-Force or X-Men?
Yep, that was X-Force number one. And what it was, Marvel kind of had a plan. They would do six new number ones. It'd start in January.
Now, again,
building up to the big number one, which usually had a hot artist involved.
Now this a lot one, of again, these number ones. Remember, this was rolling off New Mutants. Liefeld came in, introduced Cable, and again, I'm not going to get into who invented Cable because I really don't care. But that issue went insane. And people were just, so we knew when they canceled New Mutants, we knew X-Force was coming. So it was just again, you could order in advance and there were 5 different variants. And each one had a wraparound cover with a different trading card in it. And then, of course, there was a second print gold, which nobody cares about. Unlike Spider-Man.
Although at the time, there was a time when that second print was worth more than any of the first prints.
Oh, yeah.
Now, what Marvel's strategy was they would do 6 months of number ones at the beginning of the year. And they had a different name, and I don't remember what the names were. But the other books were stuff like N-Man, the Ultimate Ninja, which I'm amazed that character hasn't been revived. Dark Hawk.
Well, he is. They're doing him in Pog form.
But Marvel was about to come out with Marvel trading cards.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why they slapped in the cards with the comic. Forgetting that, comic fans would go, well, I got to have one of each. Well, I doubt they forgot it. They were probably counting on it.
Oh, yes. Because I know Groover not only
people
sold.
Would pick up the bag and look to see which card it was. And they bought 5 to get one of each. And at the time, it was a huge, huge book, I think.
Oh, big time.
I think they announced it sold like either 2 or 3 million copies. Because I know Spider-Man number one sold 1.5 million. And the comic market completely lost its shit.
Big time.
Because 3 years previously, there had been a market collapse. Glenwood Distribution went under. Friendly Franks went under. A whole bunch of these distributors went under because of the black and white boom and bust.
Mm-hmm.
There were all these Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle knockoffs, and they looked like somebody had saved up their lunch money to print them, and everybody thought they were going to be the next Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And when that market collapsed, I mean, you had shops that were just gone. And I don't mean just your regular neighborhood shop. I mean people who took out full-page ads in Comics Buyer's Guide, advertising that you could buy 40 copies of this black and white book. They were just gone. And distributors went with them because distributors weren't as professional back then. And I remember in 88 and 89 when they, oh, you know, comics are dead. You know, other than a few things, man, the comics are dead. The market's going to be dead. And we were down to like three or four distributors. There was Diamond, Cap Cities, Heroes World, and God, what was that other one that just did indie books? You used them
Cold Cut.
Cold Cut.
Yep.
And that was it. And 5 years previously, there'd been 50 or 60 distributors. That's how big the collapse was. So when Spider-Man number one came out, sold $1.5 million. I mean, the comics market lost its mind. And then X-Force number
copies,
one comes
folks,
out.
Not dollars. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Although they were $1.50 each.
Yeah.
And then X-Force number one came out off the heels of Rob Liefeld becoming the hottest artist in the world. And it sold, I want to say, either 3 or 4 million copies. And on Comics Buyer's Guide, they said these are the highest verified sales ever. Because the sales for older books like Walt Disney's Comics and Stories and Crime Does Not Pay that supposedly sold in the millions, there was no verification. Marvel verified the sales on these two books.
Now, here's how crazy this got. Okay, you could buy these books, $1.50, bagged. I don't know how many Gruber bought, probably a gross of each, but he actually was selling the cards themselves for silly money. People who didn't want to open their variation A, B, C, D, E, yet they wanted the cards separate. And not only that, but most people, unlike with the McFarlane book where they sold an open copy, if you bought an X-Force, you had to buy an extra copy if you wanted to read the damn thing.
Yeah, because, they were all bagged. Yeah, every copy was bagged.
There was not a copy unbagged to be had anywhere, at least until the second print came out. And that they give the date of eight, the same publishing date as the first one, but I don't think that's right. I know the second prints usually came out within 2 months of the first one, because it took that long to get them out. And then, of course, Pat could sell the open books for $1.50, or just, if you want the bagged one, $5. And I'm trying to look to see, let's see, what do we got here? The cards were Cable, Deadpool, Shatterstar, Sunspot, Gideon, and the Team. And I think the Team card and Cable card might have sold for more. And of course, now they go anywhere from 50 cents to a dollar on Amazon or Atomic Avenue.
And that wasn't even the biggest one.
Nope.
Because I was, like I said, I was working at Schindler's. And when X-Force number one came out, Marvel said, "You ain't seen nothing yet." And they gave us this big book of their publishing plans for the next year. They were going to do the same thing. January, February, March, April, May, they were going to have these new number ones come out. And then in June, X-Men number one, there was going to be one cover 1 week, one cover the next week, third cover the third week, fourth cover the fourth week, and it was a 5 week month. The fifth week would be a fold-out that had all four covers merged together as one, so it would be this huge fold-out. And they sold 9 million copies of X-Men number one. Let me repeat that. 9 million copies. That was Jim Lee doing an X-Men number one, and it went insane. That was toward the end of my time working at Schindler's, and I remember each week it came out, we would fill the shelf. We would have two cases behind the counter. We would fill up a shelf by each of the two registers, and we would be restocking every couple hours. People would buy a handful of it. Why? Well, it's X-Men number one. Joe, how much is that worth right now?
X-Men number one. Variation A, which has a Storm cover, is 75 cents. Variation B, which has a Magneto cover on it, is 75 cents. Variation C, which has Wolverine on it. Oh, you know how hot Wolverine is. 50 cents. Variation D with Magneto on it is 75 cents. And the variation E, which has the wraparound cover, you can get for a whopping 50 cents. Oddly enough, there is a variation F, which came out in 2011, which is the 25th anniversary edition. The only one I can find.
No, it'd be the 20th, not the 25th. It'd be the 20th.
The only one I can find on eBay is a 9.8 graded one that's signed by Stan Lee and Jim Lee, and they're asking $500 for it. And it says specially on it, Marvel One Shot, X-Men number one, 20th anniversary edition. Didn't even know that book came out.
So neither did I.
Must have been one of those that they either used for signing or just giveaway. But again, the value of, and they said it's $5. So apparently it was available if you knew where to look.
And then now, Joe, as a fanboy.
Oh, I
tell me about your experience.
I ran out of saliva.
One, I've got stories.
I was salivating so hard. I mean, we had to go down there the day they came out, make sure we claimed our 20 copies each, which means Gruber probably ordered about 2,000. And this will kind of go off into a little mini tales of the shop, because as you know, eventually Pat and I bought Hot Comics, same place we are currently buying our books from. And Hot Comics subscription rates, which we've talked about in the past, but Pat and I ordered enough where we got 30% off. So we were like one of their top, if not the top person, buying stuff. So Dan and Brian took care of us pretty well. Lord knows how many copies we bought. All I remember is when we finally bought the shop and we're digging through the back, we found a box. Now, I'm not talking a single box of, you know, 10, 20, 50, 100. I'm talking an entire case of X-Men number one, variation E, with about 500 copies in it. Sealed. Brian and Dan never got to them. We opened them up, and we just put them out at cover price. Because at the time, I think the variation with the gatefold cover was going anywhere from 10 to 20 bucks. Hot book, hot. And Pat and I are like, whatever, put it out of cover price. And that's how we got rid of them. But if they had an entire case of 500 they didn't even open, how many did they buy initially? And as far as I know, there were no incentives involved with this. You know, if you bought, even the Platinum Spider-Man wasn't so much, you know, buy this, you get this. It was sent as a thank you for making it such a successful comic. So you're talking, these boys ordered these books heavy. Pat and I ordered them heavy just for our weekend warrior fun. And I mean, nowadays, like I said, you could probably stick them out for cover price, maybe. The big advantage variation E had is it was on slightly better paper than the other ones. So you can actually enjoy the story. But then when you try to go to issue two or issue three, and it was only three issue beginning of the story, the newsprint on two and three are so jarring that it's hard to actually want to read it at this day and age. You know, again, I don't know if they ever did these in essentials, but you could probably find it reprinted in a graphic novel somewhere.
Yeah, they did a graphic novel of the Jim Lee stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Now, as a retailer, I remember 2 months before it came out, we had people coming up saying they wanted to buy a case. Now, a case was 100 comics. They'd come 100 to a box. They wanted a case. And the first guy, I was, I'll ask, one of the VPs next time he's around, leave me your name and number. But then we got another guy who wanted it. And I took his name and number, and when the VP who was the comic ordering person, I said, I got two people who will prepay for cases. You could have seen the dollar signs in his eyes as if it were an old cartoon. Cha-ching! I found out later it's because he got a commission on comic sales.
Oh.
And they put up a sign, you can pre-order a case. I forget how much it was. It was only like 20% off cover. You can pre-order a case. It's this much. You have to pay in advance, blah, 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 and you're guaranteed a sealed case of 100 copies of whichever cover you're wanting. Because you could order them by cover. But pretty much everybody, I remember the first week, sold crazy. Second, third, and fourth week sold, better than anything else, but not like that first week. Because the first week you had the people who absolutely had to read the story right now.
Oh, yeah.
And then the fifth week, the one with the fold-out cover that had all four covers, and that was the one that no matter how many copies we put up, they were gone in an hour. It didn't matter. It sold and sold and sold and sold and sold. And the thing was, there was a while there in the 90s, because they had, it was a huge headline on the Comic Buyer's Guide, 9 million copies of X-Men number one sold. But still, within 6-7 months, it was a $10 book. A $10 comic. And like you said, there were shops with cases of these in the back. But they figured, hey, you know what? It's an X-Men number one. Chris Claremont's not on the X-Men anymore. Jim Lee's left. He's going over to Image. We're going to get our money out of these books. And I feel bad for anybody who paid more than cover price for them, because even now, you could pick up a lot of those early X-Men of that run. 50-cent bins. Everybody thought, that's going to be the book that'll put my kids through college. Yeah.
Even the Image boys, when they went on to their own, I'm looking here at Wildcats, because of course you got Wildcats number one, and then you had the gold edition, and then there was the gold edition that was signed, which you got if you ordered, you got one gold for every case, I think, and then for every 300, you got a signed one. And now they all seem to be running around 10 to 20 bucks. Maybe 40 for the signed ones.
Hoover had gold for 40 bucks up until he finally sold it.
Gold, good. Yeah, yeah.
How much did he finally sell it for? Every year I'd pull it out and go, hey, it's in the price guide at $10. You're only 400% above price guide.
I know I used to pick them up out of like the cheap bins for $5 and sell them on eBay for 10, but that was a while ago. Good times.
Well, that was really the start of the variant cover.
Yeah, there were variant covers before that, but most of them were accidental ones. I don't mean that they were accident. I mean, there was like the JLA, or no, Justice League, I'm trying to think of when it came out, the comedy one. There was one.
Oh, yeah, number three, where they were testing.
Yeah. A different
Superman
logo.
Comics.
And Fury of Firestorm had one like that. There were some where there were like 35-cent variants when comics were 30 cents. Star Wars has a really hard-to-find one like that. There were, the gold key or whatever. There was like instead of having UPS or whatever, the scan code, you had the Spider-Man's head in the box, that type of variant. Whitman covers versus gold key covers, but those weren't real variant covers, designed where, we purposely put out the same comic with different covers in order to catch those who were gullible. Thank God they don't do that nowadays.
Well, one of the things I wanted to ask, because your small shop was kind of at the beginning of the new version of the variant cover, where it's, okay, for every 5 you order, you get one of these. For every 25 you order, you get one of these. For every 50 you order, you get one of these. For every 100 you order, you get one of these. And I always wondered, as a comic shop, how do you turn that to your advantage? How do you make extra money off those variant covers? Because, as Tom Brevoort says in whenever people ask him about it, he says, we sell them to shops for the same price as the non-variant covers.
Well, they like to say
you pay
that.
The same.
No.
Well, you pay the same.
You're only allowed to buy them if you meet certain credentials. So what he's saying is
technically true.
I wouldn't even be that generous. I was going to say kind of a salesman lie is how I would put it.
So how, as a shop, do you turn those variant covers to your advantage?
They weren't really in vogue when I had Hot Comics. When I had Crazy Comics, DC was big on it, and Marvel too. I remember the first one that came was a Wolverine comic, and I think for 300 copies, you got a single variant. And I was contemplating it, and I remember I just opened up, so there was no way in hell's bells I would actually sell 300 copies of this Wolverine comic. But I figured it would be like $150 cost to get this one comic. And I thought I probably couldn't sell it on eBay for that. And sure enough, the price on eBay was $150 when it came out. So at best, I would have broke even. That was kind of the extreme example. Then they started coming out with one for every 10. When I had, and Dynamite was big on that too, because they had the Red Sonja coming out, where you ordered 25, 50, 75, 100, you got the rarer, cooler, half-naked Red Sonja variant. You know, Jim Lee cover, very valuable. Joe Linsner. Again, I had some people come in and they say, I want this cover. What do you do? And I said, well, tell you what, I will charge you how much it costs me to get it, plus 10%. And then you not only have that, but then you have the comics. And most of the guys go, well, why don't you try selling them? I said, that's fine, but if you want them, they're yours. And a lot of times, you know, it'd be like, okay, here's your 100 copies of Red Sonja, here's your variant. And a lot of times you're like, well, I don't want 100 copies. I said, well, bring them to the con, give them away. Or sometimes they'd allow me to pop one in everybody's box to give it a try. Big Eddie was a fan of a lot of the DC ones. So a lot of times I would just sell him a 1 in 10 at cost, because I told him what I'd do is basically that's allowing me. So I'm just breaking even on this. You're getting the book at what I had to pay for it. And then, you know, those extra comics go on the shelf and I'll sell them or sit on them. That's how I'll make my money off them. Again, this was when I had the small shop. If I had the bigger shop, I probably would have factored in, you know, hey, I ordered 65 copies. I ordered 70. I can get one more variant. Probably would have priced the variants $5 to $10, put them right up on the shelf. As you start getting rarer variants, I'd probably put them up higher. Now, I know the source doesn't even do that. They kind of just mix them in and they give them out randomly to people. There are some people, you know, that may buy more or maybe specifically, you know, say, I want one of every variant. Therefore, if you get it to me, I'll give you all my business. So they just give them out as fun things. I would do that occasionally if I had enough variants. Most of the time, people didn't care. They just wanted one copy, be it a variant, be it not a variant. Nick also squirrels away some of the variants, and he uses them at the aforementioned FallCon comic book party. And when you go up to sign up for the drawings, those are some of the books that he's squirreled away to be given away specially for FallCon. So you got that going for you, which is nice.
I remember Red Sonja was probably the most egregious example.
Oh, everything Dynamite did was that way.
But with Red Sonja, you'd go to cons, and there would be long boxes full of Red Sonja because people had bought 50 copies to get the variant cover, and they'd only sold like 10 copies of the comic. So the sales were artificially inflated.
Jacked.
And I'd ask comic shops, you know, well, why do you have so many? Oh, we did it to get the variant cover. They said, yeah, but you're eating all these copies. Oh, no, those are all profit. We sold the variant copy for the price of all of those books. So really, a shop, if the variant covers were hot, they could use that to have a whole bunch of these on the shelf so that every copy they sold was pure profit. And for the comic publisher, it's, oh, okay, we've got guaranteed sales. That way they wouldn't have to do returns in order to have shops buy more books than people automatically ordered.
Now,
the problem with that now,
the collectability of these things, there isn't any.
Yeah.
Because I remember I've got, there was the JSA came out before the 52, and they had the, there was always like an Alex Ross variant and then the regular variant. And the Alex Ross variant was always the 1 in 10, but they're basically the same price. So even if you paid a premium for the 1 in 10 variant or even the 1 in 20, it's just a similar price. Even some of the ones that are given away at the retailer convention, sure, when they come out, they're like, $100, $200, $300 comics, especially for the guys who decide to slab them and they get a high grade. But, you know, I was thinking of like there was Infinity Crisis 1 that had a retailer variant for if you went to the Diamond Show. And, you know, again, when I got it, it was like a $200 variant. I did a trade on it. And I think I ended up selling it on eBay for $60. You know, definitely not the $200 people were asking for it. And Pat and I talk about this a lot when we get together, like we did earlier today. Just, you know, do you even go after variants anymore? And again, if you see the variant sometimes, it may be, or if you really like the artist, I mean, if you want to go for it, sometimes you can. Even Discount Comic Book Service has them available, but you're not guaranteed you'll get it all the time. If you talk to Nick at the source and, you know, you tell him, you know, I really want this variant, you know, they'll work hard to get it for you, but they can't just guarantee that they'll get it for you.
Well, and it's not one of those where if you come in every week and ask for a variant, it's going to be, you know, Nick's very good about if you really want something, he's going to work hard to get it for you. But if you're coming in every week, oh, I want this variant, I want that variant, I want this variant, I want that variant, he's going to eventually start to go, ah, you don't need all of them. He wants to spread it out so that all – he'd rather have most of his customers happy than a few of his customers happy.
Yeah. So – and the thing is, too, is I don't know how these comic stores, as I tour them, you know, I'll see a variant up on the wall for $40, $50, knowing it's on eBay for $10 to $15. I don't get how they do that.
I doubt they check.
But somebody must. You know, unless I can't believe, because I even, when I had Crazy Comics, I had people coming up and saying, well, you've got it for this, it's this on eBay. And my response would be, well, you better pick it up on eBay because I probably will and I'll bring it back here for this price. When I had the big store, eBay wasn't its big thing. I mean, eBay started in 97. So all that time up through the 90s, if I had a variant and I said it was $100, unless another store across town had it for $90, you probably dropped $100 for it. Maybe you might have found it in one of the news groups. Maybe you might have found it in Comic Buyer's Guide, but you didn't go to eBay. eBay is now kind of like the great equalizer. So, you know, you might, sorry, I'm looking right now, I'm watching an auction for a Walking Dead number 1, 9.6, $968.
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of legitimate collectibles, and that's probably the takeaway. Unless you bought that number one when it came out, you wouldn't have known it was going to be a collectible. No way, no how. I wasn't aware of Walking Dead until I had Crazy Comics, and we were in the 20s in. And even then, the story we talk about, you said, you make sure you put five on the shelf, and I will buy them if they don't sell. And I don't think you ever bought one, as far as I know.
I just bought my regular copy. Your own. And I think I remember I told you about the trades. Get the trades.
Get the trades.
Put the trades up. And I remember bringing you the sales figures going, look, it's not just that when it comes out, it's a best-selling trade. Look, in the top 10, Walking Dead Volumes 1, 3, 4, 2, all of them. And still, for years afterward, it didn't matter what month it was, all of the Walking Dead trades were in the top 100. Now that they do the top 300, they're all there too. But the top 300 is, you know, you're getting into the long tail on that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I was never into variants. I want to read the story guy. And anymore, especially with modern comics, because the covers are just basically posters. They rarely show what's inside. It's, oh, here's a cool drawing of Spider-Man for this month. Here's another cool drawing of Spider-Man for this month. You know, some books will have, you know, what's going on inside. But for the most part, it's just kind of a generic pinup type cover. Because of that, I don't pay much attention. And I've learned with digital books, they put all the covers in there. And smaller publishers are really good about that. It's, you'll click through all the variant covers till you get to the story. So I know the three variant covers for each Star Trek comic.
Mm-hmm.
Or the variant covers for this or the variant covers for that. So variant covers never really grabbed me.
So when you buy the Star Trek cover, what cover do you like to go for?
I buy it digitally, so I get all of them.
I like the photo covers. And that's
the photo
I've
covers
liked.
Are very cool.
Yeah.
And I know you collect photo covers.
Yeah, I definitely go.
But there aren't a lot of pictures of Kirk and Spock, so I've noticed on a couple of them, it's the same pose. They've just photoshopped them around a
little
bit.
And you want to know why a lot of this just won't matter? Right now, parts of Yellowstone National Park are closed because the supervolcano under it is melting the asphalt roads. It's turning them into soup. People, when this thing goes, the only comics that remain will be the ones that were put into sealed atomic-proof vaults. So there's going to be a big market for pre-volcano comics, be it variant or not variant. So lock them some bitches up, and if you survive, you're sitting on gold. Gold, I tell you!
I will trade this Tales from the Crypt number 22 for a can of peaches.
I do that, but I just bought scruffy looking Nerf Herder number 12 in mint shape, and I'm out of peaches. we don't need no X-Force, though. We got plenty of them.
Well, you know what that leads us to, Joe?
Freaking and geeking.
Yes, freaking and geeking. What are you freaking about?
My washing machine broke.
Oh.
Last week. I get it next
week.
Now,
didn't you have to just replace your dryer?
Yep. And I got to admit, they're anywhere from 10 to 15 years old. And it's kind of like, oh, son of a bitch, it just broke. I've had this thing for, okay, I've had it a while. But it broke last week. The new one gets delivered next week. So tomorrow I will, again, go up to the laundromat and do my laundry, bring the wet load home, and dry it in our dryer. Which isn't bad, because I'll bring up my Star Trek book. I'm still chugging away on These Are the Voyages. And I don't know. It's more annoying than anything. Plus, I got to make sure I got enough quarters. And it's great, because the laundromat I go to is the one that's on the opposite end of where Crazy Comics was. And, of course, the store itself now was swallowed up by the tattoo place. So they removed the wall, and now the tattoo place has their store and what used to be Crazy Comics. And before that, it was a furniture shop. Don't ask me how you fit a furniture shop in a 500 square foot shop, but they did. So all I remember is every time I go in there, they have a machine, and the machine for quarters says, you know, this is only for customers of the laundromat. And I can't think of how many times I'd be like, hey, I'm going to sneak down. We ran out of quarters. Toss a five. Got them. They're mine. Maybe I would buy a 50 cent can of pop, you know, just to ease my guilt. But, so a little bit of flashback as I do my laundry, or, you know, just trying to annoy the guy who comes in. Hey, dude, can you like give me a half a mile ride down the road? And I look at him like, dude, my laundry's in. I'm stuck here for 30 minutes. Oh man. He staggers out. I like to get there early, early in the morning. Chris has done the laundry at the same place, and she says, it's like Walmart gone wild in there when it's late. So that's about it. I'm freaking on. Corey, what are you freaking on? What's got you straining? What's got you walking dead? What's got you, oh my God, the toilet paper's on wrong and I'm having a Taco Bell moment?
Nothing.
God damn, you sound like me.
I'm doing okay.
Well, that's
you know?
Good.
Yeah, the job's going well.
Welcome to the bright side.
I was going to go see Ring of Honor Saturday night, but I wasn't feeling the best in the world.
Mm.
So instead, I stayed home and got caught up on some TV, which is, I'm okay with that. I'll just buy the Ring of Honor show when it comes out on DVD. It costs about the same. It's a $20 ticket. Or I could just wait and buy the DVD, which is about $20 with commentary. Yeah, I'm okay with that.
Hey, you put Mr. Washing Machine as your Skype icon.
That's the happy, friendly washing machine.
That's a scary as hell washing machine. You're just taunting me.
Actually, that's from the old one of my favorite old websites, the Conversatron. Let me look it up.
Brilliant.
It might be, I think his name was Washing Machine Boy.
Yeah, I think it was, because I know.
Naked Washing Machine
Naked
Boy.
Naked Washing Machine Boy, that's even better.
It was Naked Washing Machine Boy.
So, folks, if you Skype Corey, you too can see Naked Washing Machine Boy. So we are leaving you guys with oodles of things to do.
I know. One of the cool things, there was a poll taken recently. What old websites do you miss?
Mm.
And I thought about it for a bit, and you know what website I miss the most? Mm. Timmy Big Hands. Timmy Big Hands was created by the guys who did Mystery Science Theater 3000 right after MST3K was canceled. And they were putting up comedy bits. This was before streaming video was feasible, because we were all on dial-up and bandwidth cost a fortune. So it was a lot of text pieces, a lot of pictures and stuff. But Timmy Big Hands was hilarious. And then they had they decided they were going to retire it, and they sold it, and it sold for a fortune. And the company that bought it never did anything with it. So now when you go to timmybighands.com, it just says that we can't find it. Doesn't exist.
Darn.
And I was thinking other websites that I miss. I missed the Conversatron. The Conversatron was really funny. There were a few of those question and answer websites that I like. Conversatron was the best, but I like Forum 2000 and Master Ninja. But websites don't last forever, unlike this podcast. Joe, what are you geeking on? What are you loving? What have you read this week that you just want to hug?
Well, as I continue to have my wife watch Star Trek, we watch City on the Edge of Forever, and she recalls seeing that as a kid, so it wasn't as much fun as I had hoped it was. Plus, she tends to laugh at the most inappropriate moments, you know, the big dramatic moments is when she laughs. Cause, oh, this is so overacted. And I'm like, yeah, but it's the 60s. You don't have to laugh every time. I didn't laugh every time Mulder goes, the truth is out there. I did read, as I mentioned, I didn't mention it last week. I did read the first issue of Star Trek City on the Edge of Forever, where they base it on Harlan Ellison. And I, after watching the beginning of it with the crew member dealing dope, I could see, oh yeah, I can understand why they didn't want this. Not even if they had, I don't think that had gotten past NBC censors.
Right.
But when they did the scene, and I don't know if this is a semi-spoiler warning because I think the book's only a month old, but when they actually...
Yeah, the story's been out there for 20
okay.
years.
When they get to the visualization of seeing the city, the actual city that it's named for, City on the Edge of Forever, all I can think about is how cool that would have been to seen visualized. And there would have been no way they could have done it on a 1960s budget.
They would have just done it as a map painting, I think.
But still, it would have been amazing. And I know reading the there was a book written by Herb Soslow and Robert Jessman. And I actually met them at a con where they were autographing copies of their book, talking about behind the scenes. And I remember when they got to the Ellison thing, they're saying, this is an absolutely brilliant script. There's no blinking way we're going to be able to film it. Keep Ellison away from me. And of course, I think he was there busy trying to convince people, we could do it this way. We could do it this way. But I can see why Ellison was a little miffed. But as I'm reading the book, These Are the Voyages, he rewrote, Roddenberry that is, rewrote everybody. Because the problem was, is that you had, they had the characters, Kirk, Spock, everybody. You'd have a writer come in and they were grabbing some pretty big ass names to write Star Trek. And they would write a story like they've written for Twilight Zone or Outer Limits or whatever, but they did not write the character. They weren't writing for Star Trek. They were writing science fiction. And the problem was, is Roddenberry would look at this and even NBC would tap him on the head and go, you know, these guys aren't acting the way Kirk and Spock normally act. Hence Roddenberry's incessant rewriting over and over to the point where, like Ellison said, it really had no bearing on what I wrote. That's just the way it is. I guess years later when Next Generation and all the other ones were going, people would say, we have a lot of problem because people aren't writing Star Trek. And I thought, boy, that's conceited. But I guess what they're saying is you're not having our characters act the way they're supposed to act.
Right.
Hence the rewrites. So we're having fun with that. I think if she gets home tonight, I'm not sure. What do you think? Corbinite Maneuver, Doomsday Machine, or Balance of Terror?
I like Balance of Terror.
Okay, we'll go with that one maybe. Got a vacation coming up, so save up them solo podcasts Corey's doing. You'll have something to listen to. I'm going on a tremendous movie buying kick because what I'm finding out is I get the urge to watch a movie and it's not on Netflix or Hulu Plus or even YouTube. So over the past couple days, and I am talking days, I have picked up several movies. The first one from 1969, Marooned. It starred Gregory Peck, Gene Hackman, and it basically talks about three astronauts in an Apollo Command-style service module. They get marooned, running out of electricity, running out of air, and the three astronauts in there, played by Richard Crenna, Gene Hackman, and James Franciscus, they have to figure how are we going to get back to Earth, knowing they're going to run out of oxygen before any rescue can get there. I remember watching this on Mel Jazz Movie Theater some Saturday afternoon, and it utterly blew my mind, much in the same way that City on the Edge of Forever blew my mind as a kid. She has to die? Dude, they didn't do that crap on most kids' programs, so this was pretty far out. Somebody was watching bits of this on the TV at work, and of course I didn't get to watch the full thing, so screw it. For $3, I found it on eBay and I bought it. I picked up Operation Petticoat, which is a 1959 comedy with Cary Grant and Tony Curtis. Again, funny as hell, one that I loved it. Has other people in it like Galvin McLeod and Marion Ross, Dick Sargent, and again, just a fun one. A really bad TV show later on starring John Austin and Randy, the man, the myth, the man tooth. So again, $5. I picked up, going even farther back, 1933 Duck Soup from Marx Brothers, just because I wanted it. I don't have it. Actually, I picked up that. They had a what they called the silver set, where they had it where all four of the Marx Brothers were on it, and they were filmed at Paramount Pictures. So haven't got it yet. It's in the mail. And the last one I got was from 1934, Babes in Toyland, or as it's also known as March of the Wooden Soldier, with Laurel and Hardy in it. This one I first watched. We used to have a gentleman in town, John Gallos, and he would run on Saturday mornings, Sunday mornings actually, an hour of Laurel and Hardy shorts and talk a little bit about it beforehand. And then when Thanksgiving or Halloween came around, they would run Babes in Toyland, and it would run in the 6:30 slot, which was right after the local news, and it would go all the way into prime time, which was unheard of for a local channel in the 70s to preempt prime time. And needless to say, networks weren't pleased with it, but WCCO, the CBS affiliate at the time, was a pretty big powerhouse in the area, and they pretty much could do it whenever they want. That's why we never got to see the Doctor Strange hour program, because when it was on, CCO preempted God knows what. It wasn't Babes in Toyland, I know that. But it was probably some town hall meeting on corn, I don't know. So this day I've yet to see Doctor Strange, and judging by what I've heard about it, it's probably good. In terms of reading comics, I haven't read much again. I don't know if it's an off week or something, but I did pick up a copy of Chickacabra. Now that's, as you probably have heard, there's Chupacabra, which is a mythical gulch sucker cryptid that runs around parts of the Americas. Well, this is a graphic novel by Tom Beilin, who created the series True Story Swear to God, which something I babbled on and on about earlier podcasts. They're all online, by the way. SolitaireRose.com. Go download them. Free. Well, this one is the first in an all-new series. He's doing complete graphic novels. And basically, in Puerto Rico, there's a girl who could be like any other girl you see in high school, except for the creature who lives inside her. That's a ruthless killing machine. And Lily Garcia, his wife, says, this is the greatest comic I've ever read. And I've read the Bible. Tom is really good. I like his style. Good art, very well-drawn women. The one thing he did that I absolutely hate, and IDW, I might blame you, is that his back cover has that shiny gloss comic cover. So anytime I pick up the bloody book, there's a big effing fingerprint on it. And if I don't wipe it off right away, it'll stay. It's a very nice book. Not that expensive, really. $17.99. Pretty decent size original graphic novel. Again, IDW, it just came out. And if you happen to be a listener in Puerto Rico, you could probably get Tom to sign it for you. And you may have been lucky enough to pick up one of the variant cover comic he had, because he had them at Puerto Rico Comic Con. I tried my best to get there, but I got tired of swimming and came back. Corey, that's all I've got. What are you geeking on? What's got you hot to trot? What's got you chumming for chill? What's got you happier than a tornado in a Twister Park?
In a Twister Park? Hello?
Well, if I said tornado in a trailer park, you'd get worried because that's where you live.
Well, DC has done a few things to make me happy.
That's deep.
That's weird. They announced
Christina Hendricks comics is coming out.
Oh, I wish. They announced on MTV that they're doing kind of a Batgirl revamp.
Now that's a photo cover I would buy.
The,
I saw
Gail Simone quit Batgirl because of creative differences. Three days later, the editor's fired. And they bring in Cameron Stewart, mostly known as an artist, as the writer. and he completely revamps Batgirl's costume. Which, now it's the first of the DC costumes that doesn't look like it was created in 1992 for Image.
Woo-hoo.
He actually goes through and explains how the costume would work. And Stewart said in an interview that he wanted the costume to look like something you could get if you lived in kind of a hipster part of a city.
Or Target.
And there's a lot of vintage stuff in it and everything. But the way he talked about how he wanted to change Batgirl made me think, oh, it's not going to be grim and gritty and endless scowling faces and people standing around talking. And so I'm excited. I'm going to be picking that book up. And then the early reviews on Grayson are, this isn't like your typical New 52 book. It's getting a lot of praise. And there was a Twitter war between a couple comic creators that we like, where Mark Waid was talking about the Future's End. And he said, this is the most New 52 book of the New 52 books. And one of the creators on that book took offense to it. And with these changes and some other rumblings I'm hearing, the New 52 may start to become a little more diversified. You add this to Superman, and it might be that DC's going to start going back to creators kind of setting the tone rather than the editor telling the creators what to write.
Oh, my aching wallet.
So I'm excited about that. The fifth issue of Moon Knight came out, and I sat and I read all five. Moon Knight's by Warren Ellis. He's doing the first six issues. And they're really good done-in-one stories. But I remember back when the first issue came out, and now that I've read five, I still have kind of the same thing where these aren't really Moon Knight stories. They're really good stories that happen to have Moon Knight in them. He could have really put any non-powered superhero in them. So they're good
stories.
Such as
Naked Washing Machine Boy.
There's a part of me that wonders if these are the plots he had for the comic Bell that never got done. That were just sitting on his hard drive and he went through and I forget the name of the lead character's name in Bell, but he did a find and replace and just replaced whatever that character's name with Moon Knight. But they're still good and Brian Wood will be taking over with issue 7.
So we got,
and I'm not even going to get into the controversy around it because there's all these accusations of Brian Wood is a jerk at comic conventions and he hits on women all the time and blah, blah, blah. You know what? If I didn't read a comic because one of the creators was an asshat, I would be reading like three comics. I separate the art from the artist unless the artist is a real dirtbag who should be in prison. Brian Wood does one of my favorite books, The Massive. He's done a lot of books in the past that I like. I am interested to see what he's going to do with the Moon Knight that Warren Ellis has created. We haven't talked a lot about it, but issue 5 of Original Sin has come out. And, you know, they pitched it as there are going to be all these revelations of deep secrets that have been held in the Marvel Universe. And we're five issues in and we're really not getting a lot of those. But the story, other than a few things that piss me off, like the Punisher hanging out with everybody and no one's trying to put him in jail, it's a good mystery novel. I've already sent Joe an email saying who I think killed the Watcher. But it's a good mystery novel, and I'm interested to see how they wrap it up and where they go with it.
The one thing about all these sins is that they're not taking place in the series. They're taking place in the series companions with it, as well as like original issues of Fantastic Four and Avengers. Or I should say the series issues, not miniseries. Because I've already, one of them, most of that I'm ignoring, but there is one I'm going to pick up. And it has to do with Thor yelling out, "Why, Odin, I have a sister?" And then, of course, if you see the solicitation for the miniseries, they give away who the sister is. And I sure won't, even though I wonder if Neil Gaiman had that plan or if they just gave the – when he gave the character to Marvel, he said, "Do whatever you want. I'm glad Miracle Man's being published." Oh, wait, was that too much? Shit.
I think you told a little too much there, Joe.
Yeah, well, like I said, when you look at the first cover of the solicitation for the first issue, you know who they're talking about.
I've got Amazon Prime.
Ooh, and?
I just found out that many of the cinematic Titanic movies are available to watch on Amazon Prime. Now, Cinematic Titanic are kind of the original folks from Mystery Science Theater 3000. It's Joel and his crew, whereas Riff Tracks was Mike and his crew. And Cinematic Titanic did more of the obscure movies that you've never heard of, whereas Riff Tracks was, oh, we're going to make fun of the Lord of the Rings. We're going to make fun of. So I have not seen a lot of the Cinematic Titanic. So next weekend I have off. Don't bother me. Let's see. How many do they have available to rent? Well, free with my Amazon Prime. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Seven. So that's 2 hours each. That's 14 hours. There's a Saturday. And then the last thing, I have to look it up.
I should, while Corey's busy looking it up, I'll do my pimping for my eBay since I've been kind of back on it. I'm still doing it. It's under Crazy, K-R-A-Y-Z. And, just like I did with the give us your address, we'll mail you something cool. If you, do win something off my eBay, let me know. I'll toss something from the piles of stuff in for free. If you buy something expensive, I might give you free shipping. I don't know. I'm that kind of guy. Also, you can check out my old partner, Pat, at con-3153. He's got some original art up from Superman New 52, rare Dan Jurgens comic book cover, or some art. So it's all fun. I also should mention, if you do send in your name and address and win something off my pile of crap, we're not using your address for anything. Matter of fact, once it's sent out, we kind of erase it. Unless you want to be given to the MCBA's mailing list where Nick mails out cards before the cons, we're not doing anything with it. Unless Christina Hendricks makes a mistake of mailing her address in to us, don't do it, Christine. Trust me.
Yeah, I'll camp out on your lawn with the ukulele singing love songs.
Oddly enough, I could have got you a real ukulele when I was in Hawaii. So you've been that much closer to your fantasy. We now return you to our regularly scheduled podcast.
Last week, Fantagraphics put out a 2-volume, very high price hardcover. And I have read all the comics in this hardcover. Joe, have you ever heard of Wit's End?
Negative.
Wit's End came out, well, the first issue came out in like 1966, 67. And it was Wally Wood doing an underground comic.
Mm-hmm.
He published it himself. He had art from himself, Frank Frazetta, Roy Krenkel, a number of the artists that he worked with. And they put out 13 issues, although Wood only edited, I think, the first 8. And it's where... Wally Wood's Wizard King came from. There's some early Von Bode. Just really amazing stuff. An EC story that Frazetta did that didn't get accepted, so he reworked it and then just kind of left it. If you are a Wally Wood fan or you are a fan of EC, this is kind of like what Wally Wood would have done if he would have stayed at EC. I've actually got the original magazines. I bought them years ago off eBay. I kind of bought them bed where somebody had them on sale and the person who was supposed to buy them had put in a bid you know, he'd like power bid over everybody, $150. And I'd put in a bid for like 30. Well, he power bid 150 and got it. And then somehow the funds didn't show up. His check bounced, whatever. I came in second. And this was back when eBay, if the person who won didn't pay for it, the number two person could send in the money and get it.
Yeah, you can still do that. It's rare, but
they frown on it. They frown on it.
They call it second chance offer. Their idea is that you have a second one to give away.
Yeah. But I paid $30, got the whole run. If you are a Wally Wood fan, this is probably the only way you're going to get these because it's rare to see Wit's End. But it's really beautiful stuff. And it's kind of Wally Wood trying to self-publish. And the editorials are fascinating because he talks about how, you know, he was charging a dollar per issue, apologizing that he had to charge so much, that he wasn't making any money off of it, that he was, you know, having trouble getting enough time to mail everybody their copies, things like that. And it's kind of the early part of artist self-publishing, but it's also this weird sort of artifact of artists trying to break out of working at Marvel and DC and Tower and Carlton and just kind of finding out that they weren't good businessmen. So I was surprised that Fantagraphics put out a complete volume of it because every story is copyrighted by the artist, but they must have worked out some arrangement somehow, somewhere. But I'm really excited about it. I can't say I recommend it because if you are a Wally Wood fan, you already know about it and you're probably not going to pay the $90 it costs to get it off Amazon. But I'm really geeking over it because, oh, that's coming out. I'll read those again. And I haven't read them in a long time. So there, that's what I'm geeking on.
Cool.
Believe it or not, Joe, we've wasted an hour and a half talking about funny books.
Which is close because I guess NBC's trying to reboot Heroes.
Yeah. They have one good season of that show. You realize I have the last episode on my DVR and I still haven't watched it yet because I've lost all interest. I watched like, you know, the fourth season, I kept going later and later and later. Until finally it was like, I realized like about, 6 months ago, oh crap, I still have 3 episodes of that. I'll just watch them. And I watched one, and then about a month later I watched the next one, and I haven't watched the last one yet. And I hear it ends on a cliffhanger, so why bother?
Yeah.
But still, you know, it's there. I'll probably watch it at some point. And we talk mostly about comics today.
I know. How rare.
And it was my Tales from the Shop.
Yeah.
We're gearing up for episode 150. That's our next episode.
Yep. I think it's going to be an all clip episode, which means Corey's going to have to go through all 149 episodes and put together the best of.
No, I'm not.
Damn. It means I'll have to show up for it. I can't wait.
Well, as we say every week, kids, the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic you like the most. Joe?
Ever wonder why there is a stairway to heaven and a highway to hell? Apparently there's more traffic going to hell. Somebody call my mama. Play my music. I feel like dancing.
Funk is on a roll. Funk is on a roll.
Hey, yo. Can somebody call my mama? It's about to get funky up in here.